You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, we're not, the perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, and try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com. We are in a beautiful row house. The green room has been upgraded. Andrew Eby, David Goss here with you on the road for Extra Time Live. We go live on Saturday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, but we are doing so with some special guests here on the radio edition before. Charlie Bohm, Chaz, whatever. I don't think you like Chaz, but I continue to call you that at times.
Could be worse.
And Pablo Maurer here, our resident experts on everything D.C. United, D.C., Major League Soccer, Twitter memes.
So yeah, I'll let up to that one. The rest of it sounds pretty sketchy.
Abandoned sites.
Yeah. So, Pablo, you're an expert in photographing abandoned sites.
Yeah.
You're going to be doing a lot.
That's what we're talking about today, right? Only that.
Are you going to do a full RFK book?
Yeah, I mean, I could have done that 3-4 years ago. It's already looking that I've been in a I did the Silverdome after the roof imploded, and it kind of looked better than RFK did.
Oh.
So, yeah, I'm sure it'll be around for a few more years, and I'll break into it.
Word on the street is that there's a new stadium, Audi Field. We're going to talk about Audi Field and DC United in the second segment. I know not all of you are DC United fans, so stick with that. Yeah, I tight roll my jeans, Charlie.
What are those things on your feet?
These are
show socks with some cuffed rolled up jeans.
Wow, man.
I get roasted everywhere I go, I guess. That's just the way it works.
When the New York boys come down. You know, they bring us their avant-garde.
Yeah.
In five years, all of you will be rolling your jeans. I'm telling you, all right? Audi Field in the second segment, DC United. What's going to go down with this team? How can Wayne Rooney help them? Should he start on Saturday? I'm sure we'll have opinions about that. But the transfer window is open. We have a mailbag as well. We did that on the way here in an Audi with Continental tires on it. So it's very meta. It came full circle. Let's start with pickup in Atlanta. I'm working on it. If you saw that on Twitter, we're going to try to have an event at the All-Star Game. So prepare for that one. Maybe Cristiano Ronaldo will show up. I'm sure that we have the pull as a podcast and or brand to get him in the building. Probably not. But let's start with midweek results here. Union with, I'm going to call it a miracle from David Akam. If it was someone else, I probably wouldn't call it a miracle. But game-winning goal in the 95th right after Bastian Schweinsteiger got a header. This is a big moment for the Union. No idea if it'll be enough. They got to be active in the summer transfer window, but an entertaining game, at least at times, at the end, I would say, on a Wednesday night that I was not expecting.
Yeah, that was a fun game, and I particularly enjoyed the moment of David Akam's sort of celebration. So he finally scores his first goal of the year in Philly colors. He's playing against his old team at their stadium. He clearly began celebrating. I think he took his shirt off. And then he stopped and did the "I'm not going to celebrate" gesture.
No, wait, but David, your shirt's off.
So it's like I was intrigued by that. I think these dudes get caught in two minds sometimes.
Also,
maybe.
Are you allowed to take your shirt off if you score your first goal like 6 months
into
the
July,
season?
It's like July, right? Yeah. So it's been a tough year for David Akam, but he did, you know, I guess he did respect his team. I don't know why he's doing that. They traded him.
Yeah.
Like if a team trades
this is like the dumbest unwritten rule in sports. I'm sorry. Especially if it's an away game. You know, like, was it at Chicago?
It's a game winner in stoppage time after they just scored a stoppage time goal.
Yeah.
Like, you get a pass on all of that. I mean, it's not like you're going up to Section 8 with, you know, some birds raised. It's not like, you know, you're not disrespecting anyone. You're just celebrating
ledge.
A great moment for yourself because it's been a tough season.
Yeah, David Akam's been there for what, three? Was there
if
for
Logan
three
Paws,
years?
Right, gets traded to Philly after, like, you know, a career of dedicated service to the Fire, and then he's spiking.
Yeah, Chris Armas, CJ Brown, guys
like
that.
If you got somebody in the future Ring of Fire member who goes in the celebration, then it's a different matter. David Akam, I think you should celebrate, my friend.
Alexander Katai, by the way, Sam Stachel reported that is done. A permanent deal. He's signed through 2019, option for 2020. TAM player this season, DP next season. We've talked a lot about that. They needed to get that one done. But Corey Burke, he's the player who, for the Union, who don't score, can't get the ball in the back of the net, yada, yada, yada. We've talked about it over and over on this show. is now the sort of the man at this point. Are we buying Corey Burke stock? Is this a rising asset, or is this a depreciating asset that's just looking pretty shiny right now?
I'm going to say the second one. I've seen him play for a couple of years. The attributes that Philly liked in him still exist. He's got size. He's got incredible touch on the ball. He's got an ability to score in a few different ways. But I don't see from him an understanding of how to change the game consistently, and I don't think he's a high-efficiency finisher. So, I mean, CJ Sapong was the future a year ago, and he was the great finisher. And those things come and go. I don't think Philly has the answer still on their roster.
They need to find one. Summer's coming up. I mean, no. I was thinking about this today. No Ernie Stewart?
Yeah.
What's that mean for the union? That complicates the project.
I assume he's starting. You know, he's had a delayed start with his national team GM job, which I'm sure would, at least on the face of it, means he's trying to tie up loose ends with the union. But it does leave some questions there. I think they had to try and create competition at the number nine role, and Burke has offered them that at least, you know, maybe raise the intensity in training. But, you know, a goal-scoring number nine is an asset that a lot of teams around the world are looking for, and I think they're going to be in another tough spot there trying to shop on the value side of things in the window. So we'll see. You know, I mean, I'm sure Jim Curtin could make a case for trust in the guys he has, but their finishing efficiency related to chances created is pretty poor at the moment.
I mean, I like to watch him. I get a little bit nervous when it hits the final third because it's great build-up, great build-up, great build-up, shooting opportunity, goal kick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough.
That's a tough pattern. You know,
CJ Sapong definitely exceeded the mean, right? He was a statistical outlier last year, but you don't expect that player to become a statistical outlier in the opposite direction immediately afterwards. But that seems to be what's going on there.
I think you can also, if you're a Union fan, point to the David Akam trade and then wonder what you will invest if you do go get a number nine. Because remember, they invested pretty heavily in CJ after he had this big season. Mm-hmm. To me, the David Akam trade certainly was a statement of intent, but it was also a statement that we think from our price point, we're better off trying to get a difference maker internally and using TAM as our mechanism to bring that player in than going out and, say, spending a big transfer fee.
Well, I wonder if they made a call to DC. You know, I thought that Columbus Crew FC just picked up Patrick Mullins from DC for kind of a song. What was it, $150K?
$150K TAM.
TAM, that's a deal that the union probably could get done. I don't know the specifics of their TAM situation right now, but that's the kind of move that you'd at least hope they try and find the next month here.
Every team in MLS should have made that phone call. $150K in TAM?
Yeah.
For Patrick Mullins?
You get the feeling he's one of those players, too, who's gonna do very well. I mean, he's exactly the kind of guy who, you know, has an off year, off 4 to 6 months, goes somewhere else and just lights it up, you know.
Yeah, he's like every 3 months every year.
Yeah.
He scores 8 goals in those 3 months.
But everyone scores for Berhalter.
That's true. We'll see what happens. Some more fire news here. Nicolas Del Greco, a 24-year-old Argentine defender from Olimpia in Honduras. He was there for like 13 games, previously Argentine third division. He is signed with the Fire. But even bigger news, Fire chairman and owner Andrew Hauptmann announced on Wednesday that Joe Mansueto, chairman of Chicago-based Morningstar Investment Company, picked up a 49% stake in the club. This is some of the biggest news that the Fire have had in a long time, and I will not sit here and profess to know what this means for the club, what this means for their future, but I think it does mean an influx of investment. It means another big name with big money. I just wonder what that direction is and what they do now, especially with the threat of USL kind of hanging over, and we'll see what happens there. NYCFC also on Wednesday night smoked the Impact 3-0. That 5-of-6 winning run from the Impact still exists, but this was back down to earth for them. Jonathan Lewis, play the kid. He's very, very good. But I want to go back to that Mullins trade. As we said, $150K in TAM. We looked up some deals here. It's rough equivalents here. Mason Toy, the number 7 pick in the Super Draft, Minnesota United got him for $150K in TAM, the pick and the player. Jared Watts went for 100-some K in TAM to the Houston Dynamo earlier this season. Tony Chani went to Chicago for $150K. In TAM. Jose Aja was 125 in TAM. It could be more if he sticks around in Vancouver, but this is the sort of zone that we're talking about when we talk about Patrick Mullins. Does Mullins unseat Giassi Zardes, or is this a case, Charlie, of what you said? More competition at center forward, like for the union, is a good thing for Crew SC.
It's really, considering they're both, I would consider them both, you know, number nine players at, you know, first foremost. They're very different players. Mullins has always been a cerebral guy. Definitely remember, you know, we watched him just destroy the college scene at Maryland up the road, and there was all these doubts about whether he could hack it athletically at the next level. He's proven that he can do that with a sharp soccer brain. So it's a little bit of the opposite of Zardes in the sense that he doesn't have the pace and the athleticism, but I think his movement can create some trouble for opposing defenses, and it'll be a different look for the Crew. And I'm curious to see, we've seen them flirt with a 3-5-2 kind of look on and off over the past couple of years. Do you try and get two strikers when the goals go missing, as they kind of have at times for Crew SC this year?
Any chance that Zardes could play on the wing?
I don't.
All you Klinsmann folks out there are groaning and yelling at me for asking that. But you look at their wingers, and anything would be better than what they're getting off the wing right now.
I just feel like we've crashed that car so many times before,
I'll back it up if you want, unless you got a thought.
No, I don't think that he fits what Berhalter's looking for from those positions. So, because he's not a creator. He's not going to create chances from those wide positions, which hurts Mullins, because Mullins needs service. That's what we saw him do well here in D.C. when he scored, 11-11 or something like that at the end of two seasons ago. So that doesn't help anyone. It kind of, at that point, you do what Charlie said, which is play two forwards. Because the only reason you put Giassi on the wing is to crash in and be a finisher on the far post.
Of course, the transfer window is wide open right now, open on July 10th. Ethan Folley hit us up on Twitter. He says, guys, always enjoy the show, but how do you not even mention Darwin Quintero scoring one of the greatest hat tricks in MLS history? I know you were both on vacation, but what? Maybe make up for it with a top five list of all-time hat tricks next episode, prompted by that masterpiece. We will not do that, although I did put Darwin Quintero's hat trick in the top 10 plays from the first half of the season, so go check that video out. I will take this opportunity, though, to talk about Minnesota United. And every time Minnesota United says to talk about Minnesota United, that doesn't usually go well for Minnesota United. I'm just saying, there's kind of a pattern here, and I'm talking about this DP signing. Angelo Rodriguez, he is their second DP. They took the plunge. 29-year-old Colombian striker. He's got one double-digit season of goals. That was a year ago. He's got 6 goals this year. Comes over from Deportivo Tolima. They just won a title, so that's all good. But he's 29, and you just paid a transfer fee for him, and you just made him your second DP ever. The profile, and I didn't do the scouting. I'll be very honest. Haven't watched anything but the highlight video on the internet of Angelo Rodriguez.
The one of him banging in PKs?
Yes.
You're talking about,
correct.
Right.
2 PKs in the reel.
Which, if they go to a World Cup quarterfinal, he could be super useful.
There you go.
You need your guys in the shootout for sure.
But this one's kind of a big considering their central midfield is a little bit shaky and a little bit kind. Their back line has been a bit shaky. I mean, they need help everywhere. And to use that second DP slot on spot where you have Abu Dinladi, who's been hurt, I get that, and Christian Ramirez, who hasn't been the Christian Ramirez of last year, I also get that. It just seems a little strange. Must have found him on the Benedetti scouting trip, I guess.
This is a fascinating case of where sometimes more money is not always the easy solution. It can actually be counterproductive, especially when you have teams that are, the impact showed a few wins can transform the whole tenor of your approach to your season. All of a sudden you go from looking ahead to next season to maybe being in the hunt, sneaking into a 5-6 playoff spot. False hope can be very dangerous. If Minnesota have decided we're going to, maybe a little bit of urgency or desperation creeps into your transfer window decisions in the summer window, which is where the most action happens, that doesn't always go well. So I wonder if they're being honest with themselves. And in the bigger picture, I've been trying to figure out what the master plan is in Minnesota for a while, and I don't necessarily see a clear methodology to how they're going about the recent business.
They've also signed a winger, Romario Ibarra, so.
Yeah, I did like Heath's. I just pulled up the quote because I was reading last night. His comments on the signing, called him a throwback striker, and then he also called him a big old unit. So I don't know if that's a British accent.
There's a place for absolutely.
He's a big old unit. So we'll see how that works out.
That's the point, though, right?
Yeah.
He's not a lot of strength in the box, classic goal scorer for them. Yeah. He's more of a hold up player. He's a guy you say, okay, Ibarra, run off that guy. Darwin Quintero, run off that guy. See if you can make something happen. I mean, Quintero looks like a great signing. Quintero also looks like a bargain signing for his profile and his production. So, applause to Manny Lagos, Adrian Heath, all the guys there, Bill McGuire for stumping up the cash for getting that one done. And apologies in some ways for bagging on this one. We don't know. It just doesn't – if I'm a fan of that team, I'm throwing out the I'm just a little bit confused given that I think the central midfield or anywhere on the back line, fullback especially, might be a better place to put these in for results now and also, to your point, Charlie, that master plan long term, because you don't sign him as a DP on a 1 year deal, on a 2 year deal. You had to commit to him.
But also roll down the standings in MLS right now, and they're all teams that have invested intelligently on the back line. Besides Calvo, they haven't invested on the back line. They continue to spend on the attack, which isn't great. They have 23 goals scored, which isn't high on the MLS numbers. But you just roll down even the Western Conference, FC Dallas, LAFC, Sporting KC, top three teams. Those are three teams that have invested on the back line and have really strong players at center back. Got one team in LAFC who has their captain at center back.
And central midfield as well, I'd point out.
Yeah, but Minnesota just hasn't identified that in any way, as if that's not a winning formula in MLS, which is the most confusing
part. Now, the thing I have heard is that he will be bought down next year and will be just a TAM player, so that DP slot will open back up. And now, Minnesota fans, you're probably sitting at home rightfully saying, well, yeah, but we haven't shown a propensity to go out and sign DPs. This is our second of all time. So we'll see what happens. Minnesota right now, a little bit of scattershot. They say they're probably not going outside the league to make any more moves. That would seem to rule out Nicolas Benedetti. Those rumors are still hanging around, floating around, the Colombian playmaker, whether or not he'll go to Minnesota, whether he'll go to Europe. We'll see what happens with that one as well. But for now, a DP signing for Minnesota United. Let us know what you think. And maybe a winter move for the Red Bulls, for Tyler Adams, RB Leipzig. When Jesse Marsh went there, it kind of felt like the writing was on the wall. Our own Sam Scheschel is bird-dogging like crazy as this window opens. He says he has six sources saying it's going to happen, which is like kind of like pointing at the scoreboard when you're reporting. Yeah. I've honestly never heard or seen that, but I enjoy it.
Six sources?
Yeah. Sorry, six sources say. So everybody's saying. It makes sense, though.
Yeah, and I thought some of the quotes in reaction to that reporting only strengthened the report. So Chris Armas said he's in our plans for this year or something along those lines. Forgive me if I've gotten the specific
wrong. That's another read behind between the lines moment.
Right, and Marsh himself said Europe is in his future. Everybody knows that, right? And I think, the Red Bulls being part of a global network, they've taken some stick for that over the years. But here you see the real benefits that it can offer. You have a synergy across, and I know that's a dirty word in some ways, but it really applies here. There's a system that applies across the network. There's a familiarity. There's trust across the clubs. And in this case, I think it's going to have good major benefits for both Marsh and Adams.
There's also just a mutual desire to grow assets. And once again, we're going back to dirty words. Ultimately, soccer, professional sports, that's a business. Mm-hmm. These players, these coaches, they're people, of course, and the relationships matter. But ultimately, within the larger structure, they're an asset. Does it appreciate? Does it provide you value in other places? Both have shown so far that, yes, we do. And when you have that pipeline, you have people up and down the pipeline invested. So Jesse Marsh, whoever the academy director is now at Red Bulls, can care about that 12-year-old kid. But someday that Ralph Ragnick might care about him too. Mm-hmm. You just have a bigger network to push on. Dave, if he goes in the winter, some people have said that's not the best time. He won't get a full preseason. We hear that all the time. Got to have a full preseason.
Yeah.
Does that matter?
No. Does it matter? No.
Well, it matters that he gets to stick around and feel a playoff push, right? They can finish out the season. I think there's benefits in a young player finishing what you started in terms of this is a good team. This is a good Red Bulls team in New York that can make some noise. And now maybe even a little bit more urgency gets injected in the mix with a talent like that.
But he's not a guy who's going to come in and win a job starting at 19 and holding midfield for Red Bull Leipzig in his first year, whether he starts in the preseason or in the winter. So in my mind, he plays the full season for Red Bulls. He's 19 years old, 20. He can play another half season. Like, he doesn't need that rest right there. And he gets a chance to kind of get comfortable under Jesse Marsh, because Jesse Marsh's not here next year. So if he were to go next summer, he would have to come in under Julian Nagelsmann, who doesn't know anything about him. You get that opportunity for 6 months to play under a guy you know, in a system you know, get comfortable around the team, and then you try and make a push next summer after as well. He'll probably have, what, 7-8 more full national team caps under his belt? Because you know he's going to keep getting called up. There's no real competitive games for the U.S. They're going to continue to call up these young guys. So I like the idea of making that move at that time frame. Also coming off a playoff push where you should be playing at a high competitive level. So he should be moving directly from the highest intensity games he's playing of the year into now training with Red Bull Leipzig starting in December with a league that takes a Christmas break.
And they'll probably go do a camp somewhere. I mean, I typically go and do a concentration somewhere warm. So he'll have that opportunity to bed into.
Yeah, I think it's a good move. In the long run, because we've talked about this on this show, but you guys are not on with us consistently. these young players making these moves, do you – we hear from fans that they're not as happy as we are, right? Because we look at the league as a big picture and we say, it's good for him, it's good for MLS, it's good for U.S. soccer. If you were a Red Bull fan, would you be upset?
I don't – I mean, I think every MLS – I think deep down every MLS fan wants the league to become sort of a selling league, right? I mean – it's tough to sort of like break away from these players for sure, but I mean, like, I think that's the goal at the end of the day. I mean, if you're saying you want to compete, if you want to be perceived in the same way as European clubs are, other clubs globally, I mean, this sort of has to be the direction the league goes in. It has to be, you know, generally how it is, and you know, it can be tough if it's a homegrown kid who you've grown to like for years. But I mean, it's the whole point, isn't it? I mean, you know, and I don't think come back in 4 years. You know, I don't know. Like,
well, I think there's the concept of assets. It endangers dehumanizing players that in a lot of cases fans have personal relationships with. I understand that, but there's a risk to hanging on to guys too. So I think I'm looking at Kellen Acosta down in FC Dallas right now. He was a year ago. He was in a similar situation to where Adams is at, and he was ready to go. I mean, I think the reports or the rumors are that he was ready to leave last summer. It didn't shake out. I think Dallas were trying to hang on to some guys to make a push in the playoffs. And now here, a year later, Kellen's kind of having to find himself again. He's had injury nightmares. He's had problems with this form. He's got just as much competition or more now in central midfield at SCD than he did a year ago. Maybe, you know, you got to get the balance right, and you can't always control when the best time is to make a move.
I also look at, once again, to go back to the pyramid, RB Leipzig wants him to make the move at the right time for him, for them as well. So it's everybody sitting down and saying, look, it's not that we have urgency. It's not that we must bring this player in. Our fans are putting pressure on us. It's saying, what's best for Tyler Adams? How does that then chart to these teams within our organization? I think everybody's going to get the best out of this deal if it indeed goes down. Six sources, same stage goal, point to the scoreboard.
Stuff can happen, but
I see you, man.
Seems
I see.
Likely.
If you put six sources in there and it doesn't go down, it's we're definitely busting
high
you
risk,
up.
High reward here.
Yeah, we're busting.
Can't
you
wait
up
to
on
blow
this
him
show.
Up when this falls through.
Sporting KC, the striker search continues. They apparently have offers out to a couple folks. Says Peter Vermees, Kyrie Shelton will not be among the number nines playing for them for at least the next month. He had knee surgery. That's bad news for them. Also, some news out there for you. Orlando City reportedly after Peruvian playmaker Christian Cueva, which gets Dave
gets
all
me excited.
In a tizzy.
That gets me very excited. Are you not excited?
I'm always excited. Can you tell? look at me.
He's an in his prime playmaker. He can play in a few different spots along the front line. He can play behind a center forward. He can play out on the wing. He can play in a number 10 spot. He's athletic. He's physical, which is what I like about him. Is he can? People say MLS is a physical league. I think he can hang in that. And what he's done in Brazil, he's played in Mexico, playing internationally in South America. He's going to be more expensive than he would have been 3 months ago because of the World Cup. Someone in MLS should have had the foresight to sign him before the World Cup started. It's still exciting. I don't understand how Orlando would fit him into their roster. It seems like Orlando has like 8 other high-end expensive players. Someone could explain that part
and
to
playmakers me. Playmakers of that position? I mean, maybe it's the moves. Maybe you make some moves. Maybe you look at Justin Miriam and Sasha Kleshin and say, is there a market?
But
not
he
to
is.
Say either of those are bad players. It hasn't come off yet.
Yeah, Justin Miriam seems to be having a tough time. At the moment, I like this kind of idea of like you know, creating a community for players, right? So it helps that Yoshi Yotun has been a success there. Having those two guys that know each other well, should ease the transition process. I think there's a lot of benefit to that as well.
Cueva, we'll see what happens with him. Rumors flying, of course. These are not rumors. Alfredo Otuño and Iger Akeche headed back to the Spanish second division. Joe Mason also headed back to Wolverhampton. All three examples of I don't want to say. Misuse, poorly used TAM.
We should run the footage of us just complimenting all these signings during the offseason.
Yeah, I know. I think we probably did. Yeah. No, that's actually a good point. We definitely went on Ortuño. If you want to go back to the record, I'm pretty sure
Weavy's a huge Ortuño guy.
This is the nine that RSL need. You know, get rid of Euro. This was the move. Akeche, I think we looked at the highlight reels and saw all the long-distance goals, and we're like, next generation. He's going to, you know, get
he's the next
under
Victor
Vasquez.
He's
going to be the next number 10. I don't think we praised Joe Mason at the time. I'm pretty sure we didn't. I'm pretty sure we recognized that for what it was. Sam Stachel also says that Giles Barnes might be returning to Major League Soccer with the Colorado Rapids as well. He played, I think it was 3 times for Leon, all in Copa MX. Mexico. Once again, you talk about the plan in Minnesota. we've been asking ourselves what the plan in Colorado is for a little while now.
Maybe Donovan's next. Just bring the Leon contingent up north to Colorado.
He almost moved up to Salt Lake a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So maybe some clear mountain air.
He's looking for that high-altitude training.
Yeah.
A weird one here, by the way. Paul Tenorio reporting. We love Paul, of course. We're sad he's not on as much anymore. That LAFC picked up the option of Omar Gaber from FC Basel, and then turned around and flipped them and sold them to Pyramids FC of the Egyptian Premier League, and I love the name Pyramids FC.
Pyramids FC, wow.
I mean, I think Sphinx FC Oslo ought to be in the running here, but apparently it's a new-look club. Saudi billionaire bought him, and he's sinking money into him, so good move overall on the business side for LAFC.
Well, he's one, I think he's a little bit comparable maybe to some of the other players that have made moves, you know, going back home. It doesn't always work out for players in North America if you're coming to a new culture, a new environment. In the old days, MLS teams would typically just have to eat some money or do a buyout or something. And now maybe we're seeing a little more integration into the international transfer market to be able to at least cover your investment or maybe even turn a little profit off a player that doesn't quite work out.
Omar Gaber, another guy that I'm 100% sure that this show really juiced the
He was probably my I probably picked him as preseason MVP.
Something dark horse pick.
I mean, the Bob Bradley Egypt narrative is just irresistible.
I mean, he might still be for Pyramids FC.
That's
we don't
true.
Know.
That's true.
We'll just see when he actually plays.
Uh-huh,
you know?
Last question, then we'll get to the second segment. Of course, DC United, their future, Wayne Rooney, the opening of Audi Field. These guys know an awful lot about all that. Which of Wayne Rooney, Raul Ruiz Diaz, or Andre Horta, or Eric Rometty will be the most impactful so far high-profile transfer this window for the rest of this season?
Yeah, on the field?
On the field.
Strictly on the field.
Strictly on the field. Off the field.
So you were
going to
say Rooney
on
until
Rooney
he just.
Yeah,
that complicates it a little bit. Well, you know, with Rometty is more of an unknown quantity, but he's being put in a great environment to succeed, right? So I think things seem to be moving
He's the one nobody talks about. Everybody wanted Atlanta United to sign a D-mid for so long. They signed him from Argentina, reportedly for a couple mil. They got money to spend. And then it just kind of went back down the tube, and I never heard about it out of again. Like, if I had to pick one who's going to be the most influential, I would go Ruiz Diaz.
Mm-hmm. That's a big one. So, again, that's kind of the opposite, right? Seattle needs a hero, and they've made that clear and the pomp and circumstance that surrounded it. So probably by design that we're hearing not too much about Rometty right now because that club wants to make it easier for him to make his transition.
I'm going
to
say Rometty as well. I think for Horta, the problem is the team is so good. Like, how much can he really add? If he's the piece that takes them over the top, if he leads them into the playoffs or through the playoffs.
And can Bob change it right now for him? I know he's a DP. I know he was a big high-profile signing, but all their players in central midfield, other than Mark Anthony Kay, have a similar pedigree and have egos, like Lee Wynn, Benny Failhaber. Like, who do you take out when you're winning and the locker room's good? Do you play with it? Do you mess with it? He hasn't been in training with you. He hasn't been in preseason. He hasn't been in these games.
Yeah, I don't think Lee Wynn's going to be a starter in 5 weeks, 4 weeks.
Well, you know, during the Houston LAFC broadcast last week, Bobby Basel kept pointing out, and this is, you know, this is a guy who's been around the league. He knows. He kept marveling at how LAFC got this accumulation of talent in central midfield. He was saying, you know, these are guys, Failhaber, when those guys alone were the subject of major game plans, opposition game plans, and now you have three, four, maybe five guys like that in that midfield. That's nasty, and that's very good roster construction.
Let us know what you think. Ruiz Diaz, Rooney, Rometty or Horta, who's going to have the biggest impact? And, of course, MLSsoccer.com, your home for all the transfer dealings as MLS window opens and stays open. Sam Stachel is out here bird dogging at Sam Stachel on Twitter. We'll be back. DC United, Audi Field, coming up in just a second.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com. Or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions. I feel like busting loose. Give me the bridge out. Give me the bridge now.
I feel like busting loose. Busting loose. Back down, Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. If you missed it somehow, some way. Saturday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, Extra Time Live, driven by Continental from Audi Field. The very first game, the very first opportunity for Wayne Rooney to put his mark on Major League Soccer. DC United hosting the Vancouver Whitecaps. We will be there. Tune in, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. wherever you consume MLS content, that's where Extra Time Live will be. We've got interviews set up. I think Ben Olsen, Dave Casper, a little Wayne Rooney action. We're going to eat some pupusas. Dave's going to run around in the parking lot and, I don't know, have
eat
some
pupusas.
T-shirts. Yeah,
we have, no, we I'm have just going to eat pupusas in the parking lot.
Just pupusas. Yeah. So check that out. Of course, two big games coming up on World Cup Final Day. That's what I'm calling it. These are the games directly afterwards. The bump goes to Atlanta, Seattle on Fox right after the final at 2 p.m. Eastern. LAFC Portland is on ESPN. At 6 p.m., you can get the full schedule of Major League Soccer there at MLSsoccer.com. Check out the games. Watch MLS Match Day Central on Saturday night. And, of course, hang out with us at Audi Field. Here with Charlie Bohm. Here with Pablo Maurer. They know a little bit about the stadium. They know a little bit about DC United. Been covering this team for an awful long time. We're just kind of dropping through town. So,
Charlie, how long have you been covering this team?
In total, not always on the beat, but it dates back to 2004.
When was
I responded,
your,
I responded to a pretty random posting looking for freelancers in MLS markets on ESPN SoccerNet. You guys remember that?
Yeah, absolutely.
The forerunner to ESPN FC.
You know, Charlie's an OG. I just tweeted out a photo of his first credential at DC United. It says MLSnet.com on it.
Yes.
So you children out there, there's a whole world before that.
You who know nothing.
MLSsoccer.com.
What were you doing in 2004 there, Dave?
Probably going to Metro Stars games on a public bus because I couldn't drive yet.
Yeah, I'm a 2011. It's a little bit newer, I guess, but it's still too longer than anyone should be doing this.
You've still seen a lot of raccoons.
Exactly. Yeah. Multiple. Yeah.
You guys know there's a tribute to the RFK raccoon built into Audi Field. The ambient background color on the walls and like the screens is called raccoon gray.
Really?
Yes.
Some of the seats too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're trying to respect certain elements of the past in that regard.
I tried really hard to get a adult raccoon suit from like Alibaba or wherever, and if you don't buy 50 of them, they're like $500 a pop. But if you do buy 50, they're like $50 a pop. So,
what you're trying to say is now the entire office has raccoon suits.
Yeah, or if we want to get a raccoon army together before this game and really do this thing right.
Yeah.
Also, you know, it's a shocking surprise. There is a sexy raccoon costume.
Obviously, yeah. Most people who are buying 50 raccoon costumes, it's something a little different than what Andrew was
buying. I would have not gotten the sexy raccoon costume, certainly.
I didn't realize raccoons were that type of animal. But
somebody beat you to it among the Red Bulls faithful because there was a big traveling contingent at the last call at RFK game last year. And one of them was in a full raccoon suit in the front of the section that were actually popping pyro and throwing it down into the lower bowl of RFK. One of the many memories made on that the last day of last season.
Of course, we celebrated the end of RFK Stadium here in Major League Soccer last year. It was a fun event. It's an incredible venue, and I think one that people are still going to miss just for all its little – it was perfectly imperfect, that's what I'll say. It had a lot of raccoons and other things happening and falling concrete at times, but –
quirks.
The environment there from 96 on, pretty incredible stuff. You guys have toured the stadium. We're going to do that tonight, and you can catch the inside action. Basically, you've been to the stadium at least.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What'd you see?
Partial tour.
What should fans expect from this?
I mean, I think from my limited sort of access to the stadium, definitely something that excites me or would excite me if I was just a casual observer is the rake of the seats. I mean, it has that very sort of English small venue feel, very steep seating angle. It's similar to Children's Mercy Park in that way, where I'm pretty sure if you're sitting anywhere in the stadium, you're going to feel kind of like on top of the field. It looks acoustically looks like if they manage to get a lot of noise in that place, it'll stay there, you know. It is a spaceship compared to RFK. Obviously, it's just a completely different experience, you know.
And there's so I even before it was done, I've been kind of riding my bike past there, and it's in a great neighborhood. You're a stone's throw from Nationals Park, which is the baseball stadium, which has spurred a whole range of developments in the Navy Yard area. There's a big waterfront revitalization going on all across multiple sections of the DC riverfront, and this is kind of right at the heart of it. And so at first it's going to feel a little empty because there's not a ton immediately close to it. But long term, I think you could be looking at a Portland Timbers type of situation here, where it's that moment you get in an urban ground where you kind of come around the corner and it's like, bam, wow, there it is. Somebody fit a stadium in here. And it is. It's kind of shoehorned. It's one of the smallest plots of land probably in the league. And they've had to make it a little asymmetrical as a result. But it gives it a nice vibe in that that feeling that they just fit this thing in right in the middle of a densely populated urban area. And I think long term, that's going to have huge benefits for the experience.
You guys know the area better than us and the fan base. You mentioned if they're able to get noise in there, it'll stay. What do you think of going from RFK to this stadium, what the environment will be like early on, how the fans will transition, how the club will transition?
That's a big unknown, I would say, right? I mean, I think there have been some issues that have been covered elsewhere with some of the fan groups, you know, whether they'll make the transition or not. You know, the first game, I think there's a few hundred seats left, right? It's pretty much sold out. I think most of the games throughout the year are close to sold out, you know? So, you know, I definitely think it has the potential to be, you know, to be a great venue. I mean, I for sure it's going to be louder than RFK, obviously. I mean, it's, you know, there were times in RFK when you felt like you were just in a huge open salad bowl or something like that, you know. I think, obviously, Audi Field is much more intimate than that, so we'll see how they capitalize on it.
1,500 seats for supporters dedicated, up to 2,000 more for special occasions, they say, but 20,000 overall. Mm-hmm. For this new stadium.
And it's tight. I mean, it's going to be, I'm my guess, this is just a speculative guess, is that there's some standing room involved in that capacity. Because from what I've heard, that there were, it was tight. It's tight.
I believe it's 400 to 500 spots of standing room.
Yeah.
What I came across in reporting at some point.
So, and in the only open area, the only sort of like break in the bowl design is there's a little bit of a keyhole cutout so you can see the Capitol view. You'll see the U.S. Capitol, which is about 2 miles north of the stadium. And there's like going to be a rooftop bar in that part, kind of the northwest or northeast corner of the stadium. But the there's a little more of an existential question, I think, which is, can the vibe of old RFK with the rowdy fans, the loud side with, you know, Bar Brava and Screaming Eagles and District Ultras, some, you know, really dedicated supporters groups, can they create the same atmosphere that you had at RFK? And that's still an open question, to be honest with you.
Are the stands going to bounce?
No.
I don't think so.
An early design feature that may have gotten axed. I mean, you and I wrote a piece at the RFK Word Farewell last year, and I think you called it sort of RFK was like the CBGB of American soccer. And I think it is an apt comparison. It's like, you know, they're going from like a dive bar to like a more polished place on the other side of the town, and it's like that is a challenge. We can still have fun in both places, but it is a drastic change in atmosphere, you know. So I'm really, really eager to see how that pans out.
I won't make any analogies about who's going to show up and who we won't want to show up at said bars, but you know, I hope the old school guys show up and keep
it
rowdy.
It's a different
and
vibe,
keep that
right?
Tradition.
Yeah.
Right. I hope there's a little bit of both. We'll just say that. There'll also be Wayne Rooney. He did not come to RFK Stadium. He is here now, signed a bunch of money, 3.5 years. I mean, this is one of the biggest stars just in terms of like wattage and recognizability that MLS has ever seen. And I don't think that's hyperbole in any way.
No, and so immediately it says a lot probably about the increasingly sort of educated fan base you're dealing with across the league, that the immediate questions were, well, where is he at? What's he got left to offer on the field, right? How much mileage is on those 32-year-old legs, given that he's been playing it professionally at a high level since he was 16 or thereabouts? But in the bigger picture, I can tell you right away, they're getting calls, DC United. There's people paying attention now that just simply were not paying attention before. Rooney, a name like that, turns heads, not only among the rank-and-file fan community, but corporate, executive level. Like that spiked their demand for every aspect of the Audi Field experience.
It's also a good move for this market. I think people maybe underestimate the influence of the EPL, and DC is the number one TV market for the EPL. You know, I think it will undoubtedly get thousands of new eyes on the team. It will get thousands of people into the stadium. It's just an issue of what happens when they're there, you know, the product in the field. What do they see? Do they want to come back, et cetera? So
what will that product look like? Let's start with Wayne Rooney. Should he start?
I don't think he'll start Saturday. I
guess
he
gets 30
start.
Minutes on Saturday, if I had to guess. You know.
Yeah, we were discussing this earlier in the week that there's probably a little bit more of a moment, probably give a cool moment to bring him off the bench, right, no matter what the state of the game is, especially if they need something, if they're chasing the game. But in any situation, let the crowd, you know, welcome him. Don't put too much on those legs. Remember, he's basically been going through his own personal abbreviated preseason the last week or two. And I think Olsen's comments have suggested that they're very mindful of the longer term here.
He was in Disney World, what, like 3.5 weeks ago? With his
Barbados. Family. Yeah, there was a Barbados trip. Yeah,
a lot of waiting
ago.
In lines. Although probably he didn't wait in any lines. But not really.
He got fast.
He got that fast pass.
Yeah, he ordered
sure.
fast pass.
It's just
yeah.
it's crazy to meet anybody who says start him. It's just why would you put him in a position to potentially fail? Which, I'm not saying he would.
But he's a hard charger. This yeah. is not a guy who eases into anything, right? I mean, that's his style.
Let's see him in training. His
let's
face
also make
is
this point that the club is in last place. They need to average, say, 2 points a game to make the playoffs. At this point, every game needs to be a tactical decision. I mean, you need to think, do we start him because it gives us the best chance to win? And I don't know that it does at this point. He's not fit, you know? It's also supposed to be 92 degrees on Saturday. Like,
we're in the teeth of the summer here.
Also gave you the blueprint.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, no, this is not the first El Tráfico. Yes, it's the Whitecaps. There's no real rivalry
if
buzz
he
this
comes
game.
Off
it's
the bench and scores
TV.
From midfield,
it's not going to happen.
I will take my shirt off. And
nobody.
Midfield.
It's supposed to
You're
be like
record,
a
pal.
Reward that we get, not a punishment if that happens. Like,
but, yeah, just wait. Let him have an iconic moment yeah. in the game. Don't let him grind it out from the first go and see what happens. This Whitecap team is physical. They got big center backs. He hasn't really played with his teammates, certainly not in a game scenario. Come off the bench. But the season goes on. Wayne Rooney gets fit. DC United puts together some results, as often happens at home in this league. They start to believe a little bit. What's that ideal lineup look like? What's Ben Olsen trotting out there? How's he play this? Can Wayne Rooney play as a single striker? Does he play in the midfield? Does he partner with Darren Maddox? How is it built around him? What else is going to happen in this window? Because even Wayne Rooney, when asked about the future of the club, said, well, we're going to get a couple players in this window, which to me was just, again, reading between the lines, that's what was sold to him. You're coming, but we're also going to make other moves. What has to happen to make
I mean, I think I had a conversation with both Dave Casper and Jason Levien where they both mentioned they needed help at fullback, both sides of the field. Obviously, they have injury issues there. Their back line in general is a little bit of a mess right now. So, I mean, I would definitely expect to see additions there. As far as where you play him, I mean, in my mind, there's only one option. You pair him with Maddox up top. I mean, I hear a lot of people talking about playing him in midfield, and I just don't think – I mean, you saw how that went at Everton. B, I don't think he has the legs
like
for
Big
that.
Sam on Reddit, like in the yeah. Twitter boards?
Right, right. Yeah, exactly.
No, play him
wait
in
a minute,
midfield.
Wait a minute.
That's definitely
yeah.
the best spot.
Yeah, but it does then, like, and you can talk about this a little bit if you want, Charlie, it becomes a little bit of a shell game of moving players around. Like, how do you keep Lucho on the field? How do you keep, you know, where do you play this piece, that piece? And it's going to be fascinating to see how it works out.
Yeah, so there's a bunch swirling around here. The central midfield, Olsen has generally been in a 4-1-4-1 more often than not the last year or two. But they've tweaked things to try and find rhythm this year. So Areola, who you think of as an out-and-out wide player, he was brought in to play the right wing. He asked, you know, he suggested that he move centrally, and they won some games. They had a good California road trip maybe a month or so ago. Then you have Lucho Acosta, who I think is the most talented player on this roster out now, maybe even including Rooney, depending on where he's at, because Acosta is a special guy. He's the little unicorn Mauro Diaz type player who's very shifty, very creative. So I would think your best 11 would have him and Rooney in it. But then, you know, I don't know if Rooney's going to do the stuff that a traditional number 9 does that Darren Maddox has done, which is stretch to the back line, you know, try and get in behind, create a risk through pace. And do you want to protect that back four that's been a little wobbly with two defensive midfielders?
Maddox also their leading goal scorer right now, and Ben Olsen has sort of historically shown a propensity to keep guys on the field when they're doing well. I mean, I can't really, you know, I think he'll be more inclined to keep Maddox out there than you know. I don't think he's going to be the person who gets pulled out of the lineup.
Yeah, but normally he brings in like Patrick Mullins, not Wayne Rooney.
I get it. I'm not trying to say that. I'm saying they'll be out there together. Not that he's going to, you know.
Why not just
Here's
go
the deal, Wayne. You got to earn your spot. I'm not saying that's going to happen, you know.
Because Darren Maddox is going to walk up and be like, Darren is playing really well, so you play behind Darren.
Play the two
he's
together.
He's having a career year.
Yeah, that's the only move that makes sense to me.
Why don't you make it a 5-3-2, put Areola and Assad on the two wingbacks, and just go for it?
Hello, Bobby Warshaw.
Yeah,
that's a fun idea. But how often have we seen Ben Olsen play with?
I was going to say, man, you're asking for a lot of tactical flexibility out of that particular coach. I'm not saying that that's not something that can happen, but just based on history, I don't see him going that direction. It would be like, you know.
I mean, look, mess with the back line is one thing. It'll all depend on what happens this summer. Does this team have a shot in hell at making the playoffs?
Yeah, they have a shot for sure.
they have to, you know, if you just do the math, they have to basically be the best team in MLS the rest of the year. You know, they have to play the way that the top teams have played the first half of the year. It should be interesting. I mean, obviously they have all these home games, but their schedule in August gets incredibly congested too. They
comparable
don't have
to Atlanta United's schedule last
like
fall, right?
Yeah, where it was like what?
It was a double-edged sword.
3 weeks or something like that. It was crazy.
They don't have a ton of difference makers off the bench. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of reasons why they wouldn't make the playoffs. You know, can they do it? Yeah, we've seen repeatedly teams that go on these extended road trips and then just rattle off. You know, they win 7 to 10 games or something like that. You know, certainly it's a possibility. I don't know that I bet on it.
So
know?
I would say in terms of the road trip, for Atlanta, one, they had some home games, so they didn't have to make as many up, and they didn't do it in the summer outside, which makes this tough. You mentioned August. Like, it's going to be 92 degrees at these
games. Oppressively hot here, and especially even down by the water, the humidity's even worse. You know, I mean, it's like people underestimate the weather in D.C. I mean, I'm not saying it's Houston or something like that, but it is, like, it's just disgusting this summer. You
and
know,
for August and most of July, it is Houston. It is Houston-esque.
And it's not inside at Mercedes-Benz in September.
Right.
And
right.
then for Toronto, when they had these trips, or in Sporting KC as well, they weren't as long.
Yeah.
So D.C. has to recover their legs from what they've done and then try and do it in a tough time. I don't see it happening.
And also do it
with the weight of expectations.
Right.
Too.
And also I mean, kind of restarting. And I'm not saying the season's restarting, but when Wayne Rooney comes in,
of course,
you kind of hit a reset button here as far as what your team is built around and what the identity of.
I mean, I understand, too. This is a club that for years has had zero expectations. I mean, they're just the general perception of them as it's a money ball club. If they make the playoffs, that's great. They make a couple shrewd moves. I mean, all these new eyes, the Rooney signing, the new stadium, they have to perform now, you know, and that again can be detrimental if they're not up for it, you know. So
there's rumors that there might be a new owner coming in here. The team
it's not
could
a done deal,
sold.
But it certainly looks like it's happening. Patrick Soon-Shiong, mm-hmm. I believe. Yeah. I maybe
part owner of the Lakers, I believe, right?
Just owned the LA Times. Yeah, like this is. He's saying it's. He spoke publicly about it. And again, the deal's not done until the deal is done, but it certainly looks like it. Unclear whether it's going to be just a dose of new investment or new management, new managing investors. So we'll see where it goes. But there's definitely this club is going to be in a whole different level from everything from spending to scrutiny, you name it. And it's, again, it's a double-edged sword.
You mentioned China. You haven't had pressure for DC United in a while, but originally they were the champs. They were the best team in this league for a while. Give people that aren't in Washington, DC, an idea of where the idea of this club is at in this market. Do fans remember those good old days? If they play well, is it back to that? Or is it a brand new idea
they
have to
create? That you had that glory period, then you had, say, starting in 2009, 2010, a run of years where the team tried to cling to that glory period. And a lot of times fans, I'm not going to say they were mocked for it, but it's like, no, the rest of MLS is accelerating at this light speed. And like we're, you know, then and more recently, it's just been the expectation has been, you know, when is the club going to spend any money? When is the club going to show any ambition? I think tradition sort of has always been the thing with DC United. That is so firmly in the rear view at this point. And you can see it in, I alluded to the sort of issues with the supporters and stuff, and some of the original supporters feel frozen out. The club is just heading in a different direction, you know. And there are a lot of fans that are happy about that, and there's some that aren't. There's a lot of observers that are happy about it. But, you know, it should be interesting. I would say the club is pretty much completely detached from that. Those original glory days. I mean, even here, the quote from Rooney that stuck out to me was, they always talked about history here. I'm paraphrasing here. It's time to forget about that and make some new history. You know, I think that's generally probably the attitude of the club. You know, like.
And I would say the context in the city is that you have to remember this is a city that's always has a high turnover. There's always new people moving in, and it's growing drastically. DC has been in this sustained period of growth and gentrification for more than a decade, really. And so there's a lot of new people. There's a lot of new people that are into soccer but maybe don't know DC United, as the TV ratings we talked about earlier kind of suggest. So there's the perfect world is you reconnect with your hardcores that have been long-suffering while also connecting with a new demographic. That's a tough tightrope to walk. But this anecdote strikes to mind right away for me is today somebody interviewed Jaime Moreno, I think it was Univision, who is a MLS and a definitely DC United legend, right? And he once wore the number 9 shirt that Rooney has got on now. And it's a glimpse of the swagger of old, the DC swagger of old, that Moreno said, you know, my jersey's a little heavy. I hope he can carry it.
Es un poco pesadita, is what he said. Yeah,
which is incredible, right? Because Wayne Rooney's a big global megastar, but some great things have been done in that black and red shirt. And he's got to prove himself all over, at least in that one sense.
A new era, a new DC United, a new stadium, opens on Saturday. Game's at 8. You can watch that on ESPN+ or up in Canada as well. We go live at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, Extra Time Live, before all the games of that day kick off at 7. Tune in on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. Where have you been, Olsen? Dave Casper. Have some content. Have some discussions about Wayne Rooney. We'll let you know if he's starting.
You said walking that tight line. No one I'd rather walk than Ben Olsen. He's got great balance.
I mean, those two guys are peas in a pod in a lot of senses. I really wonder how the Rooney-Olsen mixture. Mm-hmm.
Do you think Olsen gifts him a longboard, or Rooney already has his own longboard?
I think I haven't said.
Contractually, I don't think Rooney's allowed to get on a longboard.
Hey, if Zlatan can rock the quad skates out on the boardwalk,
for sure.
Man,
he's doing whatever he wants.
There. I think Wayne will have a quiet suburban existence compared to Ben and his family live right in the middle of the U Street, you know, the downtown area. But there's a lot of commonalities there. I think there's a little edge that those two guys have that'll help them bond.
And I'll just mention briefly, and we're wrapping up, but I mean, there's the whole other issue of where does Rooney fit in the locker room. I mean, it's like I will say, like, I think he could be a positive influence not just on younger players but on the coaching staff. I mean, if you look at – if you think for a second that Zlatan isn't sort of using his influence on the coaching staff and his teammates at the Galaxy in a at least supposedly good way, you're wrong. I think Wayne could have the same presence. You know, DC is a young team. It's a great locker room. They get along really well, but there's not a dominant personality there. And I think that Rooney, even in his press conference, has shown an eagerness. Hey, I'm not afraid to kick somebody in the backside if they're not pulling their weight. So, I mean, I think that is another sort of good aspect of the signing. I think could be huge for them in the, I guess I'll say, in the training room, you know, now that it's Rooney. But, you know,
reminds me
the
of
dressing room.
Thierry
with the gaffer.
Rumored to have punted a bag full of balls off the training field at Red Bulls. Just to make a point.
Completely
just to let
believe
you know that.
That
this was not
he was doing that on the field, too, though. So.
Watch the game. Check out Extra Time Live, driven by Continental. We're going to be right back. Into the mailbag we go.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now at Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. We're trying something new. We're going full meta here. We're on the road, Dave, on the way to D.C. in an Audi, wrapped in Continental tires. This is our dream, basically. So forgive us for any road noise you may hear.
You see me rolling, then
they're obviously hating.
Yeah.
They're definitely patrolling.
We are trying to catch
possibly
me
riding
dirty.
We could not share that with you if we wanted to. That is off the record for sure.
We
into
do
the
have,
mailbag.
We have two guests with us. We are not currently driving. Paul Salazar
in
the driver's seat. Matt Sitkoff is our first lieutenant
we're
right
We're calling
now.
This a studio audience.
Yeah,
live
for sure.
Very small studio, very intimate, but this is the way we do it. This is not the green room.
You know what we could call this show?
Yeah,
we could call it Extra Time Live. I just made that up.
Remember, that's also going to happen.
Wait, what?
On Saturday from Audi Field. Yes, it's all coming together here, 6:30 p.m. Eastern. YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook will be there. We'll be hanging out with the fans outside. We're leaving that to Dave because he's a pupusa monster, and also he's just a man of the people. I will be inside. We'll have some interviews. Ben Olsen, Dave Casper, we hope. Kai Kamara. Going through how DC got here and what it means for this club and giving you an in-the-person tour behind Audi Field. All the beauty shots that you need ahead of this big game. Of course, this is the mailbag. You know how to get us. 401-206-0MLS. Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. At Extra Time Radio on Twitter. We thank you for all your mail, all your questions, all your queries. Let's go, Dave. What do we got?
From Perry in Portland, happy summer transfer window and happy birthday, Andrew Wiebe.
Woo!
Sorry I didn't get you anything. That's my way of saying from Extra Time Radio, happy birthday, Andrew. Perry didn't get you anything because Portland doesn't really need any signings
right
now.
I didn't get much from anybody. I'm not going to lie.
Oh,
I
wow.
think that's 32 and, you know, life kind of – and your birthday is
nobody likes you when
you
you're
yeah, exactly.
32. There's yep. a lot of singing on this
there
show.
Is, there is.
What would be your MLS gift? What would be your MLS wish for your birthday?
I mean, if I'm just going to pull something out of – you know where, it would be a transporter to every MLS stadium. So that anytime I wanted to go to a game, anytime a game like got good or anytime there was an event where I just thought I have to be there, I just step into that thing and I go. I would like it to have a few extra slots. You know, when Cameron gets a little older, we need to be taking him there. You know, maybe I bring the ETR crew. Those are the guys I like to watch soccer with. I don't know. Maybe I can monetize this. Just kidding. In the real world, more minutes for homegrown players, more opportunity for them, and more relevance in markets that need it. And I won't go and name those markets, but I think, you know, as someone who just loves this league, I want to see a rising tide raise all boats. And we've got some boats that are riding the peaks right now. We've got some other boats struggling to catch a wave, and I'd ask for some more relevance. So those are mine.
Okay. This doesn't hit either of those, but I think you'd still be excited about it. Question, how do MLS teams bring in or develop more players that feature in international competition outside of Central America? Is it just perception of the league? It seems to me that only one MLSer was on the roster of a team in the round of 16 at the World Cup, that being Gustav Svensson. This is obviously out of 16 countries, which equals about 368 players. Are the Barcos and Rossis of the world good enough to get to that stage? And if so, will they get that shot when they're in their prime?
Well, I think when you look at Barco in particular, he definitely has that opportunity, that shot, that ability. The question is, will he be in MLS at that time, that exact time? So if you look at, like, let's say just the semifinals to advance the tournament a little bit farther, basically all those players come from the top four leagues in Europe. It's almost a whitewash there in a lot of senses. So you do have to consider that just because they're not in MLS at the time they play in the World Cup doesn't mean that MLS didn't make them. And I think that's kind of where MLS is right now as a league in a lot of ways. Go get these young South Americans, and in Andre Horta's case, Europeans, develop them and see what happens. I don't think anybody's living in a world where they think, you know what, when this guy is 29, 6 years, 8 years, 10 years, in Barco's case, down the road, he'll still be in MLS, and that's okay. You just got to be a part of the international market, of the story that these guys take to the top level, and slowly over time, I do believe, whether it's in 2026 or whenever, that MLS will be a league that has a lot of those players, where they say, in my prime, at my peak, when it comes to earning power, competitive ability, MLS is an option for me. Now, we're a long way away from that, and we're a lot of steps away from that, and we're a lot of work and money away from that, but I think that's the track that's happening right now, and I do like, in the instance of Andre Horta, this kind of change, this shift to at least have a pioneer, almost the way Miguel Almirón has been for the Barcos and the Rossis of the world, to come in and say, like, you're an ambitious South American. You're a young player with European dreams. But by the way, MLS is still a great option for you, whether that's for 3 years, whether that's for 1 year, whether that's for 6 years if it works out in a certain way. I think all of that is okay. That's just me.
So you mentioned Horta being different. You mentioned Barco as well. Andrew in St. Louis asks, if you're running an MLS scouting department, but you only get to scout one country from each region for young players, judging based on quality of players, predicted cost of players, competition for those players, likelihood of being willing to sign, where would you scout in Central America, South America, Africa, and Europe?
So I just went on a diatribe there,
yeah.
Dave.
So you want me to answer first?
Yeah, you
got to
start this, yep.
So I think Central America has been pretty obvious. It would either be Costa Rica or Honduras. Honduras, you're probably getting the players at a little bit of a younger age. Costa Rica, they're probably a bit more seasoned because there's a good league there that players are coming out of. In South America, my pick would be Colombia. I think a lot of the best young players are coming out of that country. They leave very quickly. A lot of them develop in Argentina, in Brazil, and then go to Europe. You could be a part of that process. A lot of good Colombian players play in Mexico already. They're familiar with this region.
And obviously, MLS teams are doing that in Colombia, have been doing that,
yeah,
in Colombia. That's been a focus for them. I think you have a couple different ways you can go, and I know you're going to say, Weeby, you take the easy way out, and you name every single country.
Yeah, don't. You name
okay,
one
I'm gonna
country.
Give you, just give me two countries in South America. Just let me have that.
There's only like 12
yeah,
in the Confederation.
So if you're going to go right now, this very second, for bargains – and I think MLS is already doing it, and they've seen quality from it, Venezuela. But if I can only choose one country till the end of time, I'm sorry, I'm going Argentina. There are so many great options to take, whether it's young players, whether it's the Valeri-type player that never quite made it out but was really, really good and needs a new spot. I think Argentina would be the one that I would take from South America. Just Colombia's not a bad shout. It's a great shout. That's just my personal opinion.
So,
and then
so
Central America, I think you're right. And I think you got to focus around where those leagues are and where the funding will come and where the population base is, which is why I think Costa Rica's there. But I think Panama is kind of an underrated one as well.
So what I would say about the Valeri thing is that's 100% true. But on the flip side, with some of these Colombian players, they might stay through their primes. They might be an MLS version of Valeri, where you bring players in at 20 or 21, and if they can make a good living here and be a star, they have the potential to break into the national team while playing in MLS, which Argentines don't, right? Barco's probably to struggle.
But then you get the premium of selling the Argentine pedigree, which the World Cup and the squad now tells us may not be as strong as we maybe think it is at times. But there's a lot to balance there. I just had one thought. Did we just skip Mexico and Central America?
Yeah, because you're not getting those. You can't afford those players.
Sure, not now, but in the future? I don't know. Feels like I might need to take Mexico just for the long game.
Okay. All right, Weeby. So you've now selected 17 countries. Did you have anything from Africa or Europe?
From Europe? I don't know. I'm struggling because you have so many options there, and I didn't think this one through ahead of time. And Africa is really tough as well.
Although, so Africa is something that MLS teams are active in. MLS teams go and scout young players in Africa consistently. You're seeing a large part of this USL brand for MLS teams is bringing young guys in from Cameroon, Senegal, Ghana.
Youth internationals.
Yeah, and giving them opportunities to familiarize themselves with the U.S., with the way your team plays, and see if you have future talent there.
I might say Ghana. Just based on the Right to Dream success that MLS has had and some of the language similarities that makes the transition a little easier. But again, that's guesswork. I'm not going to lie. That's guesswork.
Let's move on then. Evan from Dallas, which is worse, TFC's collapse this season or Dallas's last year?
TFC's collapse this season, I think.
Wait, what?
I think for sure. Because Dallas, they were like, oh, maybe we could be this. Maybe we could win. Maybe we could realize our ambition and our dreams. But they hadn't got there yet. So there was no certainty that they were actually that good. And then they fell off. And that was sad. And it is what it is. But it wasn't like this was a team that we said, you need to win the title or everything is a bust for you.
But is it?
Toronto FC were on they were on the mountaintop, man. They were there. This was supposed to be a dynasty continuing into this season, maybe even to the season after, given the length of contracts that they had. I think that is more painful than Dallas's.
Is it really a collapse? Because a collapse, they were never in first this year.
Who, Toronto?
Yeah.
It is a collapse. You were in the CCL final.
Okay, but that's a different competition.
You were the undisputed best team in MLS. You were the team that everybody said, well, everybody else is just playing for second.
But that was last year.
Because there's Toronto FC. It was this year, too, man. It was this year through CCL final. We said, you know what? They'll play TFC, too, in those MLS games, and then they'll come out and they'll lay the smackdown once
again. Okay, but FC Dallas had a huge points advantage already that season. They had already done it, first of all. And second of all, they had an advantage. We believed that TFC could do it this year, but they didn't have any points on the board.
I don't know, man. You looked at that Dallas team, and when you compared them to the rest of Major League Soccer, I don't think anybody sat back and said, they're so far, head and shoulders above, that we can't see any scenario in which a crash or even a blip downward happens. And once it happened, did anybody really sit around and act surprised? Like, it wasn't like they had a talent base that was just so far and away from everyone else that they stood alone. They were playing well, and they had Mercurio Morro. Like, we didn't know what he was going to be. We didn't know if he could stay healthy. There were always caveats. There were always questions. With Toronto FC, we didn't have those caveats and questions. We weren't sitting here saying, oh, yeah, well, they lost CCL final, and that was a great run. But I actually think they might suffer in MLS. I don't think anybody was saying that.
Shout out to Ellicott City, by the way, as we drive by, home of Paul Salazar, who's still in the driver's seat. One thing I'll say, though, about last year's Dallas collapse, when that happened, when you talked about the U.S. national team job, Oscar Pareja was always in that conversation, and you didn't question Oscar Pareja last year, and now he's not even talked about.
Yeah, it did dampen the stars of some other players. We throw out Kellen Acosta in that same conversation. I mean, he was last year in CCL leading up, playing with the U.S., you know, doing it in Mexico alongside Michael Bradley. His star was way up there, and we're saying, hey, look, his roommate's Christian Pulisic, and where can he go? Where will he go in Europe? When will that happen? And now we're saying, will he get on the field? Will he be a starter? So things change quick.
Moving on here, we already smoked ourselves for some Minnesota United unlove, but Burke from South Dakota said ETR totally ignored Darwin Quintero's hat trick. Loons fans don't get a lot, but at least give us this. Let's move on and say Matt in Boston. Last episode, Doyle said NYCFC has a more talented roster than the Red Bulls. Wouldn't that therefore make Jesse Marsh a better coach than Patrick Vieira, since Marsh's system keeps New York Red Bulls consistently on par with, if not better than, NYCFC?
That's an interesting thought.
There's also a follow-up question here, which is interesting as well.
I struggle with the whole, like, who's a better coach when you're trying to compare apples to oranges? Two different rosters, two different philosophies, two different, I mean, honestly, if you're going to throw it in there, stadiums to play in, and Yankee Stadium changes 17 games a year for NYCFC. It's a different game in a lot of ways. So I don't think you look at both and say one's better than the other. They're different coaches, different goals, different methods to get success. I do think that what Jesse Marsh did with the Red Bulls is something that I know we've praised on this show a lot, but may not truly be appreciated, and we may be seeing a point for the Red Bulls where that will come into better focus. I think Chris Armas will do a great job, but we're about to see firsthand what the differences are with Jesse and without Jesse, even if the system is the same. I also think I don't know. What do you think? I'm struggling to wrap my head around good or better.
So yeah, I don't know that there's really a way to break this down unless you talk to a player who's played for both, and I think like maybe Ryan Mira. No, Mira was under Jason Christ. I don't know that there is anyone. But Jesse Marsh came into a Red Bulls team, changed the way they did things, made them successful. But they were successful before, and Bradley Wright Phillips and Luis Robles, two of his cornerstones, were in place before he got there. Patrick Vieira came, and outside of Villa, who you know who David Villa is, he either had to make reclamation projects of everyone that was left or bring in a whole new roster to a brand new team, basically. I think maybe his job was tougher, but I think Jesse was more successful. So I'm splitting hairs here as well. Let's see. Can you answer this one? Who is more likely to succeed with their team in Europe now and why?
Well, one's a head coach, one's an assistant. So I think it's pretty obvious that Vieira is the only one with kind of the agency on his own success. So you've got to say Vieira. But I think that, as we said on the last show, Jesse Marsh has put himself in the position that he wanted to be in, which is in Europe, but without the immediate pressure hanging over his head, which is what we saw really hurt a guy like Bob Bradley. And he has the buy-in of the organization, and he has a mentor next to him in Ralf Rangnick to help guide him through. And he has an opportunity then to work under Julian Nagelsmann, if he sticks around for year two, to have another kind of massive rising star, baby Mourinho, as they call him in Germany, to be under and to develop a reputation. And then after that, it's up to him. So I think this question is not really a next year question. It's a 5 years from now question. Who will be in a better position at that time? And I continue to say Patrick Vieira. And that is because Vieira already has the bona fides in Europe. As a player, now as a coach, he has an opportunity. He will get opportunities. He will get a leash that Jesse Marsh, I don't believe, would get. And that's not, it's not about whether it's fair or unfair. It's just the way the world works. And I think you have to look 5 years down the line, because that's when you'll truly know whether Jesse Marsh's gambit paid off. Does that mean he's a European head coach at a club there in a top division? I don't know. Does that mean he's the U.S. national team head coach? I don't know. But this move by Jesse Marsh has immediate benefits for him, but in my mind really is a long play. Whereas Patrick Vieira, he got the job he wanted. He's going to Nice. They're an ambitious club in France. He's got an opportunity to spend a couple years there and maybe flip that into Premier League or La Liga or Serie A or wherever he wants to go. So 5 years from now, let's measure this one.
If Jesse Marsh wanted to coach under the next Mourinho, he could have just gone to Colorado and coached under Anthony Hudson. That was also his nickname. Also, throw out there, Vieira may have just lost his two best players going into Nice.
Hey,
so it should be an interesting
rebuild again.
Season for him. We have Daniel Pigeon here. He said, twice I've read Doyle say that Ike Opara is the one player for SKC that's irreplaceable. I will argue until I'm breathless that it's Ily Sanchez. He is the irreplaceable for SKC. He's the heartbeat of that team, damn it. And there isn't anyone else on the roster that can fill that role with close to his ability.
I do think he is a quiet linchpin. You know, there's a lot of those in Major League Soccer, I feel like. And I like to talk about Diego Chará because he's spent, you know, the better part of a decade doing what Ily Sanchez is doing without getting any plaudits. Nobody can fill his role, but I do think Sporting Kansas City over the course of a season with, say, and I know people are going to be like, hold on, that's crazy. Roger Espinoza, not Juan Cusain, he's too young. I don't know, maybe you move a Madranda in there, maybe you can find a way. I mean,
yeah,
there is
all the things you're saying.
The more I think about it, he may be as irreplaceable, if not more. I don't know. That's two guys that don't get a ton of pub. Ike finally got his due with the Defender of the Year that are huge for Sporting Kansas City. But if you've looked at Sporting Kansas City over the years and you've watched their success and you've kind of measured these different eras that they've had, they've all been built around, I should say, a central midfielder, a holding midfielder, whether you're going back to the days of Julio Cesar early in this Sporting Kansas City era, or you're talking about Ilya Sanchez or Uri Rossell, there's always been that metronome in the middle that really set the rhythm, that really set the distribution, that really set up the Ike Oparas and Matt Beislers for the success that they've had. So shout out to Ilya Sanchez. He's been great, and I think he gets the All-Star nod, yeah?
Two more here. As we roll down I-95, it feels like we're driving on silk in this Audi on these Continentals. Second to last, Jalen Lindsay, not Daniel Shallowy, will be our best player for the next era. Thoughts from Andrew and MCP.
Yeah, probably, because I think there's a good chance Daniel Shallowy could be sold, given that he's got the passport to go to Europe. I mean, if you look at Sporting Kansas City.
Do you think that Sporting KC,
this is their
with the next generation of players, so they lost Eric Palmer Brown, do you think that they will hold on to these players a little bit longer? Do you think they'll be quick to say, okay, if you find a good deal in Europe, we're happy to let you go? How do you think they play that?
I think that they will have learned a lesson with Eric Palmer Brown, and if they see that potential for future transfer profit, they will make sure that that player is locked down in some way. And I think you've already seen Peter Vermees learn that lesson a little bit, in the sense that Jalen Lindsay, Juan Cusain, even Gianluca Busio to a certain degree at times, have gotten opportunities, have kind of been shown that, hey, if you play well, you can get on the field. And we trust you enough to put you in these situations to blood you, which it just never seemed like Eric Palmer Brown got. And whether that was because of injuries, because of youth national team duty, because of the fact that he did have Ike Opara and Matt Beislers in front of him, he just didn't get the signals that he needed to sign a contract. And, oh, by the way, he had enough interest to say, I'll just wait till my contract runs out, and then I'll go where I want to go, to Europe. I don't think they'll make that mistake again. They've been very savvy over the years about selling guys at the right time, which is what I think eventually will happen with Daniel Shallowy. I think eventually someone will come with an offer that Kansas City says, you know what, this is the best thing for the club. It's the best thing for you. It allows us to reinvest. This was a great move on our part. It's great plaudits for our academy, our recruitment process, and Peter Vermees' connections. We're going to move you, Daniel Shallowy. On the other side, I think they'll be willing to do the same with Cusain, with Lindsay, with Busio, if it ever gets to that point. But I think they're doing the right thing now, giving those guys some time, letting them see the light at the end of the tunnel so that an EPB situation doesn't happen again.
Final one here, Kevin from Milwaukee. A big thank you from me. He sent in and he mentioned some of these foods I was talking about, Georgian foods. He gave us proper terms. So the bread that I was talking about on the last show is called kachapuri. Another great Georgian food is called kinkali, which is called pelmeni in Russian, which is the dumplings which have the broth in them, and he says are clearly amazing. And he recommended to us that if we're in D.C., which we're about to be, we should go to a restaurant called Supra, which is great authentic Georgian cuisine if anyone else is in D.C., Kevin from Milwaukee recommends it.
Did you what's your strategy on the soup dumpling? Because I'm thinking about hot broth inside, and I'm a little wary.
I'm very
excited,
specific.
But wary.
No, I'm very specific about what I do. I open it. I put it on my spoon. I open it. I let it cool for a little. Then I slurp out the broth, and then I start eating the dumpling. You never just go in for a bite.
Right.
That's how you burn your mouth.
Yeah, that's like, you know.
That's 101 right there. Yeah.
Easy burn. Of course, you mentioned it. We're in the car on some Contis, rolling to D.C., 6:30 p.m. Eastern, Saturday. Extra Time Live, driven by Continental, our third show of the year. thank you for watching the LAFC one. We had a blast there opening up Bank of California Stadium. Now we get to be there for the opening of Audi Field and, I presume, the debut of one Wayne Rooney. The game is at 8. We'll be live at 6:30 till 7. Interviews with Ben Olsen, Dave Casper, Kai Kamara. Dave will be in the parking lot, so holler at him if you see what's up. And certainly we would welcome a adult beverage or two, maybe a pupusa, out in the parking lot. And then also more Extra Time Live coming for you from the All-Star game. We'll have more on that very, very soon. And more on that potential pickup game that I'm working on right now. Could be a really fun time. With that, we're going to get back to the road. Thank you, Paul, for driving us so, so safely. Thank you to Pablo Maurer and Charlie Bohm for joining us for this episode as well. We'll see you on Monday, everybody. Have a good weekend. ¶¶